at all. It's Parshas Voskhana. See, the usual thing is for everybody to talk about the very beginning of the Parsha and the 515 tefillos. That's the norm, the more normal thing to do. So we'll do that at the very, very end, but I'm going to skip toward the end of the Parsha, because Perek Dalid Pasuk Mem talks about something that usually is skipped over and then usually isn't talked about. It's the Ari Miklat. So let's first do Pasuk Mem. It says, "Vishamarta Schuka Ves Mitzvos." You should keep the laws and the mitzvos. Asher Enoch Mitzavach Hayom, that I command you to do today. Asher Yitzav Bechol of Anecha Acharecha. That's good for you and your children after you. Uleman Tarech Yomim Al Adamah, to give you Arichos Yomim, so that you live a long time in the land. Asher Hashem Elokecha Nosim Lecha Kol Yomim, that God gives you all these days. Now, if you were paying attention for the past parsha and a half, that means that this ended the Musar Shmuz. He started with Parshas Devarim, the very beginning of Parshas Devarim, and went until the middle of Vaskana. It was one long speech, and it ended right there. Pasuk Mem Aleph starts off, "Oz Yavdil Moshe, Shlosha Arim, Ve'Ivra Yardin." Then Moshe Rabbeinu separated the three cities on the other side of the Jordan River, Mizrach HaShemesh, in the east side of the sun. At that point, when he had finished giving his Musar Shmuz, before he speaks to Bnei Yisrael about the Atzeret Dibros and goes through what happened to them after that, at that point, that's when Moshe Rabbeinu separated those three cities on the Ivra Yardin on the east side of the sun. Two massive problems that are brought up by the different Rishonim. Number one, you just finished your Musar Shmuz, but it took a parsha and a half to get there. Now you're going to separate the three cities? Now you're going to get to this idea of separating these three cities? Well, what happens? Why wouldn't you do this before you started the Musar Shmuz, or after you're done? Because he's not done yet. He's still going to speak at the end of Vaskhanan about the Asaras Dibros. He's going to go into Akev, Re'eh, and Shoftim regarding certain mitzvos. Key states, he's also going to bring mitzvos. I mean, what's going? Then he's going to go into the brachos and the klalos. So why didn't he wait until the very end to separate the three cities, or do it before he started? What happened that right in the middle he said, now I've got to separate these three? What's the uz? Uz Yavdil Moshe, that right then, that's when Moshe Rabbeinu separated those cities. That's question number one. Question number two is, why did he bother separating them in the first place? We all know that there are six Ari Miklat, six cities of refuge where a person will go to if they kill somebody accidentally. Three of them are in Eretz Yisrael, three of them are in Ivra Yarden, three of them in the land of Eretz Yisrael itself, three on the side of the river, of the Yarden River where Moshe Rabbeinu was. If those three cities are not going to work until the three cities are made in Eretz Yisrael, which is the Drosha and Makos and Daf Yud, if they're not going to work anyway, what was the point of Moshe Rabbeinu separating them in the first place? Why bother doing it if it wasn't going to work, if it wasn't going to do anything? Was that even a mitzvah? Was there even a mitzvah here that he was accomplishing? So for the second question, we're going to answer that question first. Rashi brings down an answer for that question. He brings down the Gemara Makos Yudim and Aleph that says, mitzvah she'efshir l'kayimo, that a mitzvah that is possible for you to be mekayim, you got to be mekayim it. That Moshe Rabbeinu was always kesef lo yisva kesef. He loved silver. Silver is a reference to mitzvahs. He would never get enough silver. He could never be satiated, never be satisfied with the amount of silver that he had. He just wanted more and more and more. Some even bring this as a raya, that one should love doing mitzvahs, that one should have chavivus ha-mitzvah, that chavivus ha-mitzvah, loving mitzvahs, was his meteorites from the Torah itself, based on these psukim, that we see that Moshe Rabbeinu did not have to separate the three cities, but he separated them anyway. He did it out of his love for Klal Yisrael, and saying to Klal Yisrael, this is what I want to do for you. So that's the lesson that Moshe Rabbeinu is teaching us, that even if you aren't accomplishing anything with your mitzvah, do it anyway. The Ramban adds to that, that Moshe Rabbeinu told something strange to Bnei Yisrael. He said the following, whenever you could be Mekayim HaMitzvah Hashem, do it. Why? Lema'an Yitav Lanu. So that is good for us. So the question is, what does that mean? What does Laman Yitav Lanu mean? So the Paris Yosef, it's a sefer, it's a Likud sefer written by a Hasidic Jew. I can't say a rabbi, it wasn't a rabbi, but a Hasidic Jew. He has a whole Likud. He wrote inside there an answer himself. This is his own answer for Laman Yitav Lanu. He said the Pshat behind Laman Yitav Lanu is that if you show by your love for mitzvah, say you're going to do a mitzvah that you're not going to get schar for anyway, you're not going to get rewarded for it anyway, you're doing it anyway, then it shows you what you're doing the other mitzvahs for. You're not doing the other mitzvahs just stomp to get rewarded. You're doing it because automatically, okay, if I get rewarded, I get rewarded. But you're doing it because you really love doing mitzvahs. You really want to do the word of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, even though you're not going to be able to really accomplish anything. I have no idea if Moshe Rabbeinu ever gotten any And he ever got any schar from doing what he did? Maybe he didn't. Maybe he separated the three cities, didn't get any schar whatsoever. And then when Yeshua went and separated his three cities, then the three cities automatically worked. But the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu separated them beforehand, it didn't really do anything. Who knows? L'man Yitav Lanu was to show HaKadosh Baruch Hu how much we mean to him, that we should get good things from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, sort of like a reward from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, for doing the things that we're supposed to be doing, for doing things in the right way. That's the part of Yosef's answer. I think there's an easy answer that goes a little bit different. The Peshat would be the following. L'man Yitav Lanu means is that, think about when a person does a mitzvah. What ends up happening if you do the right thing? You give tzedakah and you know you were supposed to give tzedakah. Or, I don't know, you davened well, and you know you davened well that morning, that afternoon, that night. You finish your davening, and you feel like, well, I really accomplished something. I think my davening really worked there. You feel good about yourself. You feel like that I did something that I wasn't able to do beforehand. I really accomplished something. That's what a person feels. That's l'man yitav lanu. If you do a mitzvah like this, like separating the Arei Miklat. Granted, you might not get tzchar. I don't know what's going to be in Olam Haba. Maybe you won't get anything. Maybe this didn't count as a mitzvah at all. You got nothing at all from it. But l'man yitav lanu means is that you feel good after you finish doing it. You say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I don't know if you really wanted me to do it now or not, but I'm feeling good about it afterward. I'm feeling that feeling of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is with me on this one. And that's the idea of, you might not get tzchar, but we love HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so you're doing it for that reason. That would be the idea of what the Ramban is saying, l'man yitav lanu. Okay, the Kli Yakar says, it's just like David Melch. David Melch made the foundations of the Beis HaMikdash, even though he wasn't chayav to make the Beis HaMikdash. In fact, he wasn't allowed to make the Beis HaMikdash. Nathan and Avi told him, it is impossible for you to build up the Beis HaMikdash. But he did everything he could. He set up the foundations. He bought the land from Arvana HaYavusi to make sure that they would eventually have that land to build the Beis HaMikdash. That's why it's called Beis David. It's called his own house because it was the Beis HaMikdash that he built. It was something that he himself had gotten involved in. Now, you might be able to understand the pasuk before that. The pasuk before it says, "Shemarta zchukah v'smitzvos rishonot k'mitzvah hayom, asher yitav lecha." That will be good for you. That's the wording of the Ramban, l'man yitav lanu. Ulevanecho achrecha. But it's not only for you, it's for your children afterward. Why do you plant an esrog tree? It's not for you to get esrogim, because the esrogim won't grow in your lifetime. It's for your kids to have esrogim. Why would you plant a cherub or a buxer tree? The concept is that it's not for you, it's for other people. It's the idea of building something so that other people, your children, or the grandchildren, or whatever it is, they'll be able to benefit from it. That's the concept of what we're saying over here, that Moshe Rabbeinu said. Here's the idea. You want real Abichos Yomim, you want to last longer in this world, you want it to be that l'man l'man Tarech Yomim Ha'adamah, for your legacy to be known for a long time, do something not for yourself, do it for others, and then automatically, says the Kli Yakar, then it will be good. The pure proof to that is the three Arei Miklat. Those three Arei Miklat that Moshe Rabbeinu made did not need to be made, but it was made by Moshe Rabbeinu. They were called Moshe Rabbeinu's Arei Miklat. He made those Arei Miklat, and because he did that himself, he was rewarded to be known as somebody that was there. Did Moshe Rabbeinu need anything else to be able to continue his legacy? But that's the idea, and that's the Uz, says the Kli Yakar. After he heard that idea of l'man yitav lecha ulevanecho acharecha, immediately Moshe Rabbeinu set about making this. The Sforno, Rashbam, Chizkuni, Rabbeinu Bachaya, Shach HaLaTorah, Reb Moshe, and Reb Eliashiv all say the exact same thing regarding these concepts. This is all for Chizuk. All for chizuk, that they understand that to learn or to hear musr without doing anything afterward, if you get up after a musr shmooze, and you get up and you're just the same person that you were before, you accomplished nothing. Nothing. You have to do something after you hear a musr shmooze. You have to accomplish something. You have to at least sit there for a minute or two and to be able to learn a little bit, because otherwise you didn't get anything out of it. The whole point of a musr shmooze is to be able to do, and that's what Moshe Rabbeinu taught us. Moshe Rabbeinu gave the musr shmooze for 40 days. 40 days he got up there and he spoke. And when he finished, he didn't just stop and just say, like, all right, that's it, guys, go and do something. He did something. He got up and he separated the three cities. He got up and he said, I'm going to do something because I was impressed by my own muster. I thought that was awesome. So he got up and he separated the three cities and did it himself to show everyone. And that's why right afterward we say, Zosa Torah asher sam Moshe l'fnei b'nei Yisrael. This is the entire Torah. The entire Torah is like this. It's one thing to learn it, yet another thing to do it. This is the Torah asher sam Moshe l'fnei b'nei Yisrael. The Moshe Rabbeinu himself put in front of b'nei Yisrael and said, this is what you got to do. This is how you do it. This is what you're supposed to be doing. That's the concept over here. Says the Netziv, it wasn't easy. It absolutely was not easy, says the Netziv. When I was talking to you in Berlin, talking about Reb Chaim Brisker, there's not much that you can say about the Netziv. I mean, the Netziv, one quick story. The Netziv at one point, he had an esrog. It was very hard to get esrogim in Volozhin and Brisk and wherever it was. Anywhere around that area, it was very, very hard to get any esrogim. He got an esrog from a certain area. And Reb Chaim Brisker, his son-in-law, didn't hold that it was a good esrog. He thought it was murkav, that it was grafted with another tree and was sort of lemonish. So because of that, he didn't want to use the esrog. So the Netziv sat there and he said, you absolutely have to use the esrog. It's the only esrog we have in the entire city. If you don't use this, you're not going to have an esrog. And Reb Chaim held that it was usher to make a bracha on such an esrog. You couldn't make such a thing. So the night of Yom Tov, that first night of Yom Tov, before they used it for the very first time, that night, Reb Chaim is in his sukkah sleeping, and somebody comes in and wakes him up at 3:30 in the morning, one of the Talmidim, and says, your father-in-law wants to see you, and Netziv wants to see you. So Reb Chaim ran over to his father-in-law, and his father-in-law's sukkah, ran over to the sukkah, and he said to his father-in-law, Rebbe, what do you want? He said, I thought it was an emergency. So the Netziv said, I want to show you all my Mar Mekomos as to why I think you can make a bracha on this Esrog tomorrow. I'm showing you these Mar Mekomos. There's no good zikr. You can go ahead and make a bracha. You won't have any problem. No issue with it whatsoever. Showed him the Mar Mekomos. Rechaim said, wait a second, Rebbe, I have to make a bracha. I have to make Birkas HaTorah. I haven't made Birkas HaTorah. I just ran over here because I thought you needed me. Let me make Birkas HaTorah. The Netziv sat there shocked. Now remember, this is the first night of Yom Tov. This is Bein HaZmanim. Okay, then it looks over at Reb Chaim and says, I have a son-in-law who didn't make Birkas HaTorah by 3:30 in the morning? That's my son-in-law? What in the world? Like, what are you doing? It's the first night of Yom Tov and you're sleeping? How could that be? He's a good person. Then it points out that it wasn't easy to do. This wasn't an easy thing to do. He had to search everywhere in Eivar HaYarden for the right cities. Because, yes, the cities were mentioned by the Torah where exactly to put them. But he didn't know exactly which cities would fit the best. And some say that Moshe Rabbeinu did not have the cities told to him by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He had to find them themselves. They had to be the right distance apart. Perfectly equidistant from one another. They had to be middle-sized cities, not too big, not too small. He had to make sure they had rivers nearby. They had to have shukim nearby, marketplaces that would be nearby. They had to have certain things there. It took a lot of effort and a lot of time. It's not like Moshe Rabbeinu just spent a day or two doing it. It might have taken a month. It might have taken even a year to be able to do in the 40th year while they were fighting Sichon and Og. He's going around, looking around for the cities to figure out where exactly the cities were going to be, where the Ari Mikkel were going to be. Says in Netziv, it wasn't easy. This is the concept that he brings down regarding these Ari Mikkel, that don't think that learning anything when it comes to Torah is going to be easy. You just open up a sefer and it's right there in front of you. No! A person has to learn Be'ian to be able to sit there and to understand what he's doing, and he's going to have to try hard. There's no water breaks. There's no bathroom breaks. There's no, let's spend 3 hours in a morning seder. It's spend 12 hours to be able to try to figure out something and then tell me that you don't get it. But if you only spend 2 hours, an hour, a half an hour trying to figure something out and you're saying that you don't get something, of course you don't get something. What do you expect? How would you expect to get something? That's the concept of the Netziv. To be able to work hard on anything that you have. Okay. Stami Yediyah, by the way, Sofnas Paneach, I found this while looking up other stuff. Makos Yudim and Aleph says that these three Ari Mikkelot, although they didn't work perfectly, they worked like the other 42 cities. Meaning, if you went in Lagas, if you killed somebody accidentally before the other three Ari Mikkelot and Eretz Yisrael were made, and you ran to those three cities in Eivar HaYarden, they would still work. If you knew what you were doing and you knew that those cities worked, you would be able to go in and you'd be able to be there. Sofnas Paneach says that. Everybody argues on him. It's a big chiddush. Regardless, that's there. Now we're going to get into the little Kabbalah part of this issue. The Medrash Rabbah brings down that Uz is a Lashon of Shira. Where do we see the word Uz? Uz Yashir, right? Uz Yashir. Every time, and Uz, it's funny because nobody ever remembers that it's also by the Be'er, when the Be'er sang. It was also there as well. The Uz is by that as well. Uz is a Lashon of Shira. So therefore over here as well, it's supposed to be a song. It could have said by Yavdel Moshe Shlosha Arim, that Moshe Rabbeinu separated three cities, but it doesn't. It says Uz Yavdel Moshe. That's when Moshe Rabbeinu went ahead and separated the cities. Says the Das Zakenim. Das Zakenim is the Baal Tosfos in the back. When they heard that someone who kills Beshogeg is Eretz Liyachuper Badam Kim Badam Shofcho, that you will not get an atonement unless you die. You have to die in order to get an atonement for killing somebody Beshogeg. They said, Oy vey, we killed somebody Beshogeg. I fell down a ladder, and then all of a sudden the guy dies, and now I'm not going to get a kapara.
They said, "Oy vey, what are we going to do?" Then they heard about Ari Mikla. They heard that there's such a concept of an Ir Mikla. They said to us, "Wow, an Ir Mikla, what a concept. We can run to the Ir Mikla, run away somewhere, we can go there. And then we're going to get a kapara." Once they heard that refuah, they sang Shira to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They sang to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, "Thank you so much for giving us this concept." Dr. Kainu says in other words, Misha Ochol Tav Shel Yodea Tam, a person who tastes the food knows the taste. Moshe Rabbeinu killed the Mitzri. When he killed that Egyptian and ran away, he knows what you should do instead. You should run away if you kill somebody. Now granted, he didn't kill the Mitzri accidentally. He killed the Mitzri on purpose. Perhaps, maybe, you can say the following. I don't know if this is entirely true. Everybody knows that Moshe Rabbeinu killed the Mitzri according to Rashi with the Shem Mefurash. He used the word taket. It's not bad than the word Yali, Yud Lamed Yud, which is also a Shem of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, one of the Shem Ayin Bez. One of those two words was used to be able to kill that Mitzri and to bury him inside the ground. One of those was used. That's according to Rashi. In Pashas Pshat, he didn't kill the Mitzri with the Shem of Mefurash. He killed the Mitzri by punching him, by hitting him. The Gur Aryeh says it straight out. That Vaday, not only did he kill the Mitzri with the Shem of Mefurash of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he punched him as he was saying the Shem of Mefurash, and that's like a Mike Tyson knockout, if you've ever played that game on the original Nintendo. That's like the original. Because you say the word at the exact same time, then the knockout becomes something more powerful. Then it becomes a real punch that goes all the way through. That's what ended up happening. So it's possible he didn't mean to kill him. He meant to knock him down, to knock him out, to get him away from the Jews, so the Jew could run away. But he accidentally killed him. And that's when he ran away. He ran away because he did it accidentally. And maybe that's the idea. He knows the onus of the Dasakanim. He knew that to run away would be a kapara for killing somebody b'shogeg. He ran away, so he taught it to Klal Yisrael. This is crazy. Says the Gilyoni Ashas Rabbi Yosef Engel in Shabbos Pei Zayim and Aleph, as well as the Marsha in Makos Yunim and Aleph. Most of it was Mechadish this din. He made it up. He was when he told it to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he said, "This is the halacha. If you kill b'shogeg, you should run to near miklat." The official halacha by HaKadosh Baruch Hu was la'eretz le'chupar l'dam. There should be no kapara. Nothing should happen. There is no way that anybody will get a kapara for killing somebody b'shogeg. And Moshe Rabbeinu said to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, "Let's make a din. Let's make a halacha of running to a near miklat, like what I did. I ran to Midian first to Kush, and then to Midian. I made it up. So let's apply that for Klal Yisrael." And HaKadosh Baruch Hu was masking to him. It was a chiddush.
Because he
didn't intend to kill the Mitzri, according to this idea.
So, but
once he said a shame and forish. I guess, yeah, the shame would have to be thrown to the side a little bit. Or it was a shame that knocks down your enemies doesn't necessarily kill them. Here, it killed the Mitzri. The Mitzri was so evil, it killed them. And plus, I mean, Moshe Rabbeinu was Hevel, and the Mitzri was Kayin, so that he also, Hevel had to kill Kayin back. So eventually, that was part of it. So it happened because HaKadosh Baruch wanted it to happen. But that's the idea behind it. That's why the Shach says, the Shach calls up, he goes up and he says, "I'm a Chayiv to sing Shira." That's Oz Yavdil Moshe. Moshe Rabbeinu himself got up and said, "I'm a Chayiv to sing Shira, because I didn't realize there was such a Kapara available. I needed a Kapara. I didn't realize that what I had done is correct." That's the idea. I didn't realize that was there. The Chidah brings Ramazim after Ramazim after Ramazim, that this is referring to Moshe Rabbeinu. V'samti lecha makom. I make for you, not lochem, lecha for you, Moshe Rabbeinu. You will have a place. Asher Yanus Shama. Shama are the same letters as Moshe. That it all applies for Moshe Rabbeinu. And that's Oz Yavdil Moshe. It's not Oz Yavdil B'nai Yisrael. Oz Yavdil Moshe. This was his tikkun. But I've got a question. That can't be it. That can't be enough. Because just singing a song of Shabbos, when all of a sudden you get there and you realize that you can run away after killing somebody b'shogeg, just isn't enough. That can't be enough.
So
even that is not enough to be able to make a huge song out of it. It's not like Oz Yashir. Oz Yashir, you're watching all of your enemies drown in the river, drown in the Yam Suf, while everything else with crazy miracles. And then, like, oh my gosh, Ari Miklat? Like, you're missing something. There's something a little bit off that's over here. So listen to this. I don't know where I saw this. Shilas Vitshuvis Ksav Sofer. Ksav Sofer, the son of the Ksav Sofer. In Orach Chaim Kuf Lamed Vav. I couldn't find the sefer in Skokie. I was looking everywhere. The library's closed. I couldn't do anything. And I realized they probably have it here. Because they have Shilas Vitshuvis here. Fantasy, yeah, that's what happened. But I went straight here, and I realized they have it right in the shul. So I grabbed it off the shelf, and I couldn't find it. It was a huge tshuva. And then I found it, and I was like, oh my gosh, this is nuts. Here's his kasha. The kasha that was posed to him was the following. Is it better to place your full bitachon and trust in God and to say the following, that if someone comes after you to kill you, he has a knife and he's ready to kill you, or a gun and he's ready to shoot you, is it better to not do anything at all and trust that God will save you? And if you do anything, you're lacking in bitachon and you don't really believe that God is out there in the world. Is it better to do that? Or is it better to not be somech al hanes, to not rely on a miracle, and to do something to help yourself? Which one is better? Rely entirely on God, or to not be somech al hanes? Which one is better? So the Ksav Sofer brings another sefer, that he brings a proof from Shmuel HaNavi. The Shmuel HaNavi says, Eich Eilech, how can I go, he said to, when he was told to anoint David HaMelech, how can I go, v'shema shol v'hargeni. Shaul will hear about it and he'll kill me. Shaul will hear that I'm going to anoint him and he's going to go ahead and kill me. So that proves, like the second part. Not like the first part, but the second part. That it's better to not be somech al hanes, but you have to do something. You have to do something. You have to ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what should I do in that situation? Yeah. He's asking on a klal, for a general rule, what's better to do? Is it better to have this, or is it better to have that? Which one is it? And right now we're saying, it's better to not be somech al hanes. Don't worry about your bitachon, and that's going to be that. This was exactly, so the Ksav Sofer says, I have another riot. You're a mikla. What happens when a guy kills another person to shogeg? You kill another person to shogeg, the goel adam comes after you. You have the redeemer of the blood runs after you, and if he kills you, you're dead. That's that. So what do? You run to the Ir Miklat. Says the Ksav Sofer, you don't think HaKadosh Baruch Hu has myriads of ways to save the guy who killed the shogeg from the person who's going to kill him? Why should he run to the Ir Miklat? He shouldn't have to do anything at all. He shouldn't have to do anything. I mean, if we're saying that you should have pure bitachon in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, pure trust in God, and assume that God will take care of everything for me, then over here also, you kill somebody to shogeg, don't run to an Ir Miklat. From the fact that there is an Ir Miklat that you have to run to, must be that you shouldn't place your trust in HaKadosh Baruch Hu that much. You can't be so mechal anes. He brings that as a riot. Yeah.
The thought of the guy who killed Max and he himself was a Russia, and that's why he...
Good. Yudim Abizamako said that. But he's not a Russia for that matter. The fact that he does kill, he is a Russia, but he's not a Russia in that he killed somebody. He's not a Russia, a murderer. He's a Russia in that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to show him that he's not being careful with human life. That's all it is. But he's not a Russia in that way, that he's purely Chayav Misa. That was Moshe Rabbeinu's Suffolk. He sat there in Mitzrayim. He killed the Mitzri B'shogeg. And he said to himself, what do I do? I have two choices in front of me right now. I could run away, or I could stay. If I purely trusted in God, remember, this is Moshe Rabbeinu. This is not Joe Schmo off the street. This is Moshe Rabbeinu speaking. Moshe Rabbeinu gets up there and he says, oh, sorry, Dad, I didn't even realize. But either way, regardless, my dad's name is Dad, but Schmo is somebody different. His last name is not Schmo. But regardless, but it's not just Tom, somebody off the street, like Aryeh. Well, you see him. But either way, it's not just Tom, somebody off the street. Not Tom, somebody off the street. It's Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu said, should I purely trust God? Should I stand there and stay in Mitzrayim and not move and assume that God is going to take care of me? Or should I get up and should I run away? And remember, he was captured. He was captured by the Egyptians. Somebody captured him, grabbed him, and the executioner, the chief executioner, took the sword, slammed it down in Moshe Rabbeinu's neck. His neck turned to marble and it killed the executioner. HaKadosh Baruch Hu can save you in any way possible. Moshe Rabbeinu said, should I run away now or should I just stay? If God saved me this time, he can save me another time. So maybe I should stay and never leave. He didn't know what to do. In the end, he ran away because he assumed he shouldn't be somech al hanes twice. He shouldn't be somech al hanes another time. But he never knew if he was right or not. The entire time he sat there, he had the Ksav Sofer's Kasha, and he didn't know what to do. Then came this parsha of Ari Miklat. Once Ari Miklat was said that if you kill somebody with shogeg, you run away to an Ir Miklat, that running away is a kapara, Moshe Rabbeinu said, I got it right. I should have run away. I ran away for the right reasons. I ran away when I killed him, Bishogi, and that was the right thing to do. To not be somech al hanes. When he realized that he was zocha to get the halakha correctly when he was in Mitzrayim, he sang shira to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, thanking him for allowing him to come out with the right psak, for allowing him to say the right thing at the right time. That's the concept of what Moshe Rabbeinu was doing over here. That's the Ksav Sofer. And this is the whole idea of what he was singing about. Because otherwise, the singing is a very, very strange thing. Now let's get back to the very beginning of the Parsha.
up until now, we said that Moshe made the three cities, even though he knew it wouldn't work. We also said the connection to the Parsha before him, that Moshe practiced what he preached. He was a pure practicer, and he went ahead and separated the cities on his own. There's a remez over here, which we didn't really get to with the Chidah. I'll probably have to get to that. And then number four, the Shira that was sung was for the Arei Miklat. That taught Moshe Rabbeinu that he was right. He was right about what he did. Somech Alanez versus Bitachon Hashem. Our world is not to be Somech Alanez. It's that to go ahead and run away when we have somebody running up against us. The first word in the Parsha is Boaz Chanan. Boaz Chanan equals 515. In the end, he failed. He didn't go to Eretz Yisrael. Va'etz Chanan, and I davened to Hashem 515 times to ask that I go inside Eretz Yisrael. And it didn't work. It didn't work. He didn't go into Eretz Yisrael. HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him, Rav Lach. So why is he telling us how many times he davened? That's pathetic. And why would you bother telling us that if it didn't work in the first place? It didn't do anything. So the Mashiach, the Ishbitzer says, it's not true. It vaday worked. It vaday 100% worked. We have to know what Moshe Rabbeinu was davening for. Moshe Rabbeinu was davening to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and saying, allow my zchus to go in with Bnei Yisrael. Allow me to be in with them, that when they go into Eretz Yisrael, it won't be hard for them. That Yoshua will be there, but I need to be there with them as well. I need to be there when Yoshua is there. I need to be there for Klal Yisrael at all times, because eventually they're going to sin. They're going to do things wrong. Let me be with them the whole time. Now, he wanted to be there physically. HaKadosh Baruch Hu allowed him to be there spiritually. His tefillah worked. Zchus Avos is brought back for Klal Yisrael whenever they remember Moshe Rabbeinu's tefillah. That if you sit there and you say it's Ba'isahi that he davened, but it applies at all times, that's the Lamor. Lamor means saying over to Bnei Yisrael, whenever you need me, I'm here for you. I'm davening for you. I have this tefillah that's up there in Shemayim, that's sitting and waiting to be pulled down, to be grabbed by anybody in Klal Yisrael whenever you need it. You want tefillah, you want something to work for you in Eretz Yisrael. Moshe Rabbeinu's tefillah is there the entire time. That's the idea behind it. The Chiddush HaRim says that's the point behind everything in life. This idea of what Moshe Rabbeinu did. Do whatever you can and then accept the Gezerah of HaKadosh Baruch Hu with Ava and Simcha. You daven, you work, you do everything you have to do in order to make your life a better life. And if in the end HaKadosh Baruch Hu will not allow you to get something, then you accept it Ba'ava. You accept it Ba'Simcha, and you're happy and you're loving about it, knowing that you can't do anything else about it. You tried your hardest, you did what you were supposed to do, unfortunately it didn't work out the way that you planned. He adds that when we're bitsar and we feel pain, and we feel like nothing can help us anymore, all you have to do is say, it's not me anymore, and that's when Moshe Rabbeinu's tefillah kicks in. That's the idea of when it kicks in. At that point, where we feel we're not owed anything at all, we just want HaKadosh Baruch Hu to give us a matnas chinam, a gift for free, that's the concept of what we have. And the final idea is that's the remez behind the Arei Miklat. The Arei Miklat are supposed to stand for something else entirely, and it's the Chidah that brings it down. Arim, he says, are the three destroyers of our world. Kina, Taiva, and Kavod. Jealousy, that's Kina. Taiva, desire, and Kavod is honor. Those three things take a person outside of the world, according to Pirkei Avos. And those are the three cities that Moshe Rabbeinu set up. Be'ever Hayarden means it's a reference to Olam Hazeh, to this world, which is like a bank of a river. Like the river is supposed to be Olam Haba, supposed to be Gan Eden. And we're just on the banks of the river waiting to go into that area, something that's there. Mizrach HaShemesh, until the sun shines and Mashiach comes, we have to live in this world of what we have. And Moshe Rabbeinu was able to make a Havdalah, Oz Yavdil Moshe. He was able to make that Havdalah, that by learning Torah in the right way, you can destroy those midos within you. You can even keep the Malach HaMavis at bay, so that you can decide when you yourself want to die, like David HaMelech. Or Rav Chista, or Rabba Bar Nachmani and Baba Metzia. You guys all know the Gemara. Moikam Chav Chesam Abayz, Shabbos Lamed Amal Aleph, and then by Baba Metzia Pei Zayin. I mentioned those three Gemaras where if you're learning Torah at the time when the Malach Mavis is supposed to take you away, the Malach Mavis has absolutely no power. No power, cannot do anything whatsoever. That if you do it correctly, this is the concept of an Ir Miklat, of true Arei Miklat, protection while you're in this world. By learning, that's what gives you the ultimate protection. So that's the end. Those are the three cities. That was the Shira sung by Moshe Rabbeinu. And our final thing is that Moshe Rabbeinu did not fail when he davened. He 100% helped us in everything he did. It was something that we just don't always understand and we don't always see, but it's there for the taking at any point, at any time. Have a good shot.